And welcome to episode number five?
Five.
We are at number five. If you are listening to us right now, make sure that you can hear us. Give us something in chat. Make sure everything's okay and hunky-dory. We are making sure everything's working. Mm-hmm. If it's not, tell us. We'll get it fixed as quickly as we can. We're going to try to make sure everything's working before we get going. Everything sound okay?
Oh, let's check that, shall we?
Yes. I'm checking, fixing the Facebook live feed because the chat's not coming up.
Sounds like we're good here on Twitch, so thumbs up there.
Sweet. I'm gonna make sure that... Oh, you butt monkey.
I'm sitting right here.
I'm trying to get our Facebook feed to go up, but of course it's not wanting to work.
It showed we were live for a second there.
Yeah, but there's a problem with the...
No, it works. I'm on it. We're good.
Yeah, but the chat's not showing up. What? Seinfeld's Seth? What is he doing here?
Hi, Seth.
I didn't know that boy was alive. Must be a slacker.
I hope you're enjoying your weekend off. All right.
So it looks like everything's working. Hopefully everybody's going to come back. This is episode 5. In episode 5, we're going to talk about the closing of game studios. What we've done, because we've been... John and I haven't been around a bit. What else did I have planned? I've slept.
That's pretty much exactly what you told me you had planned. So anything else is a surprise to me, sir.
We're definitely got a media section. I'm actually going to work on some models, and I'll be showing them, because there are actually models that are not legally street date available yet.
Oh, snap.
I had these models flown in from New York City.
New York City! Get a
room. From a friend of mine, which he actually has asked if he could come on the show and pimp stuff out. Does anybody know Tectonic Dan?
He only stayed in my home last time he was in the area.
Yeah. Well, he was at Nova and, of course, went to and was able to find me 2 units of Murder Crows.
Oh, cool.
So I'm going to work on those while we're talking. Big thank you to him. And I definitely want him to come on the show because he does a lot for the community.
He does.
Does a lot. I mean, he's a really nice guy. Mm. So other than that, let's start off. John, what are you drinking tonight?
Well, I'm going to start off with a shot of Serpent's Bite, which is actually almost empty because apparently I drink a lot. And then, I'm going to follow it up with a Kraken Barrel, which is Kraken and root beer, which I have tentatively mixed together, and I have the root beer on hand in case it's too strong. Seth, what do you got? Or not, Seth! Got nothing. He's at home. Gonzo, what do you got?
I have a glass of water that I've got to work on because I did a pretty good amount of sweating today. And I am drinking my last bottle of vanilla porter.
Oh.
Dun, 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 dun. So, I've got to figure out how to open this because I can't find my bottle opener right now. My awesome handy dandy.
There it is.
There it is. Knuckle duster bottle opener. To all of our friends, to everyone that watches, everybody that does this, we appreciate it. And also, let's make sure that all of our nice friends in Florida and everything stay safe.
Yeah.
Cheers.
Cheers. Seth apparently has a Wind Ridge cranberry cider.
What the hell's wrong with him? Is he sick?
I don't know. He's not on, so I didn't have a Smirnoff Ice because I felt like I need to keep it alive. Let's save those for him.
Oh! Y'all haven't seen it because I was awesome to me and I hid it from y'all. But since Seth is on here, Congo, I love you.
Wow. That's wow.
I miss.
I am scared now. I haven't had time this week to watch last week's, and I am now scared.
Man. Yeah, I would say Zorkova.
Wow.
Yeah, I'd definitely go with Zorkova. Let's get back a little bit back on topic.
Please.
These came in this week. I didn't get to show y'all yet because I was going to show them on the show. I've actually used them, and they're really good. They show up, and they look gorgeous, but our action figures came in. So our action figures for our dice came in. I'm trying to get out of the way so it'll focus on it. There it goes. Focus, you dumb butt. Well, not going to focus very well, but you can read it. It does say our logo. It does say everything. They're a nice little blue.
Yeah, I like the blue.
Yeah, they turned out really well. Blue and gold.
You can post them on Facebook later so I can get a good picture of them, but
yeah,
I'll post a big picture. The reveal is done.
And so we have them, and I will be sending those out to all of our patrons that have contributed to that. Hopefully everything's going to work good today. Hopefully everything's going to go, because we have a lot to talk about, a lot to catch up on, because we did some of that in the pre-ramble, yeah. Which was a lot of GW talk.
Yeah, you mean the mostly 40K pre-ramble?
Yes.
check that out, guys, if you haven't. If you're not watching us live, the only way to get it is to be a patron, so go check us on Patreon, subscribe, and you get the pre-ramble, just for jumping in.
These are actually, they're not Signar colors. They're kind of a bluish purple because they've got like black swirls and like silver swirls in them. So I'll post up cut pictures when we get done today.
Those would be called marbleized in the business. Yeah.
Which was actually really cool.
Should I mention I actually worked for a distributor for games for a while too before GW? I've been all over the game industry.
Well, I mean, we got them through, you know, of course, the biggest dice company around, Chessex. They're really good. Yeah. I actually have my own custom dice that says Gonzo on the six, which is very douchey and very, you know, asshole-ish.
It's less douchey than the ones that a local sold that said Like a Boss on the six. They're cool, but a little douchey, especially when you use them in 40K to seize the initiative, and you're like, I hate you so much.
So what it is, I'm going to use these as my normal dice with my Grimkin, because I've been playing Grimkin a lot lately. And then use one of my Gonzos as my column or branch or whatever type thing.
So I have not rolled a dice for a game in some time.
Oh, wow. Why not?
Well, Malifaux doesn't use dice. And the game I played this weekend, the only other game besides Malifaux I played this weekend, also does not use dice. It was a board game with no dice, so I have not had to roll a die in a while. It's weird. It's very weird.
Which, you probably... I'm going to say, I didn't like the concept of it when I watched like the playthroughs and some of the demo games I saw on there, but the models are so fucking cool. Their models are great beyond belief.
And once you get through the initial shock of not rolling dice and the way it works, it's a pretty good game. It is the out of the book, it's the best for all spectrums of the game. You need nothing else, you need your book and your models, and you're like, I can play competitively, casually, whatever, with just this.
Yeah.
That's one of the things I like about it.
Because I went and looked online and looked at the models, so I was looking at the models to see what were cool looking, and there is a shit ton of models for this game.
Yeah, and they require you to be a pretty good hobbyist because they are a bit fiddly. And then some of their special edition stuff. I was looking at the Curiosity Killed the Cat, which is basically an alternate version of a crew that exists. There is Hamuel and the Plague Master who has a bunch of rats, but this is a cat version of it.
Oh,
and
crap.
On the side of the box it says, lots of small bits, only for expert modelers. And when a Malifaux box says that, I get scared.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, since you said it was a cat thing, you probably got Erica playing it anyway. She's always into cat stuff.
Well, then she should check it out. There was during their Gen Con sale, they might put it back out for their Black Friday sale. I think they're only doing two sales nowadays. They're only doing Black Friday and Gen Con. They used to also do Easter, but I think they're trying to back off so they don't take sales from the local gaming stores.
That's good. Mm-hmm. I mean, you always want to give stuff out at Gen Con and do this stuff, but I mean, yeah, you still got to help the local. Because if you don't help the local, you got no place to play.
Well, yeah, they actually do a cool thing, and I have my receipt here so I can say it, come to mind, where if you buy, they have a promotion, sometimes they'll put extra stuff in certain boxes that came out, but only ones that go to the stores, not the ones they sell from their website.
Ah.
And you won't be able to know if you get it or not if through internet sales, so you have to go to the store to get it. It'll have extra stuff in it, like the Tanuki box, which are very cute little, you know, drunk, you know, small panda-looking things. The box set in the stores is going to have an extra pose that you can only get in that box.
Ah, that's cool.
And then the other things to do on alternate months, so I don't have anything coming out, is they will do, if you buy X amount of money worth of stuff at a local store, and just take a picture of your receipt and send it to them, they send you a model.
Oh, that's...
It's a promo model. It's usually just like an alternate version of a model you can get in a box. It's not special or anything, aside from just being a different sculpt.
Okay, and, well, here. You got to say something about different sculpts, because one, P.G. Gorman. How many people go clamoring over a P.G. Gorman?
Yes.
So special sculpts are pretty popular, and
yeah,
people
absolutely.
Fight for them.
Mm-hmm. But this is an easy one. You just got to buy so much in money and stuff from the local gaming store.
Yeah, because that was we had a grouping of Malifaux players,
mm-hmm.
but it kind of died off. But I think that was mostly because, 40K and Privateer Press just racking it up.
And that's a good thing to note, before we get into our main topic, is that when a game rises from the ashes, as 40K has, all the people who left it to play something else, 40K is still their first love, unless they just didn't know that War Machine was going to be their thing, or whatever game they went to.
Yeah.
Deep in their heart, they're probably still like, man, I'd love to play 40K, but it's just crap. And then it comes out with a new edition, so all those guys are going to go back, so you're going to see a lot of different communities change their size and dynamic, because those people are going to go back. And some of them will go like, I can spend time playing both now, but some are just like, all in 40K, forget the other stuff, 40K was my love, it's back again, and I'm back. Which is cool.
My first official miniature video game or miniature game was Warhammer Fantasy. Loved it, had a lot of fun. Then it kind of died off, and so I went to 40K because it got a little bit more popular. And I went to a tournament and won it, and I felt really bad for winning it because of how I won it. I was playing an Alchok Ranger Force.
Oh,
and
fuck that!
Yeah,
fuck that in the ass. I'm going to start off with your models dead, pinned, and other stuff, because
yeah.
I can.
And that's the reason why. And the meta and the players were getting really rude and mean, and it was getting to be really hateful. So I actually quit.
Oh, wow. I actually didn't hate the Altec Ranger Force. It's a little strong of a word. I only hated when people tried to cheese it, when it was like, I played a kid randomly at the Battle Bunker, the GW Battle Bunker in Glen Burnie, where he came and he's like, well, I'm playing two detachments. I'm like, well, we have not agreed to a two detachment game. Tell me what you're doing and I'll tell you if it's okay. He said, well, I've got one detachment of regular Eldar, then I got a small detachment of Altiac Ranger Force. I'm like, no, that's not okay. He's like, but, I'm like, no. If you wish to play multiple detachments, you go, hey, I want to play a game. I would like to play with multiple detachments so I can use multiple different types of rules.
Yeah, I mean, I went to the tournament and I think I had like 7 to 9 units of Altiok Rangers,
mm-hmm.
and I played a Tyranid player. We were in the finals, and
so much.
I kind of felt bad because I rolled and got to shoot some things. Oh, your Termagants didn't get to come on the board this turn because they lost. And then it came down to his headquarters unit, which was Hive Tyrant and Guard. And I rolled the one where they never get to show up in the game at all.
Yep.
And so...
Yeah.
That was the game. He couldn't survive.
Yeah, there's no way. Do you remember the Lothran Seaguard Force from one of the Worldwide Event books?
Mm-mm.
It was literally the High Elf version of that, where all units of archers got to shoot things before the game. They don't care about range modifiers and all that. Just like, I'm shooting. Oh, you have a character? I shoot your character. He is dead.
Yes.
It was. The GW has always had a problem with cool, fluffy rules that do not work well in a tournament competitive environment.
Correct. Yeah.
But.
Which you actually get to hear a lot about in the pre-ramble. If you're part of the patron account, you're getting into it and doing the, what are we doing, $1 fee?
I think it's $1. $1 episode, $1? You get that, yeah.
Yeah, $1 per episode, you can get that. And then at the $2, you get the cool action figure. And then, was it at the $5 count, you get our special podcasts and stuff?
Well, yeah, it depends on how you price it. I forget, It's currently listed as per episode. I don't know how many you're charging for. I think you're planning on doing it a per month thing. Like, oh, we had a good month. You paid $1. You get $1 total fee. You get all this.
Yeah.
We need to talk about that and make sure we're all on the same page.
What?
But yeah, you get whatever Seth puts out. And he put out one already, and he's working on another one right here. And you also get... Minis and Movies, which is the spiritual successor to the Co-host Corner, where I talk about minis and movies. That's cunningly titled, I know.
Well, I mean, we're also going to be putting out some stuff that are just fun. I'm going to be putting out the... I got to do the review on... what is it? That board game I said I was going to review. Dark Souls, sorry.
Dark Souls, yeah, Dark Souls, yep. Board game.
And I'm going to get that for free, just because it's... I mean, it's not a big deal. I'm not...
Yeah.
We're not money hungry. We're just trying to make sure that the game, the podcast continues on without a bunch of fees.
Yeah, because, you know, we do have to buy stuff. Eventually, Seth needs to get a camera. We'd like to help him with that. We might have to pay for hosting or better internet for various people to make sure we can host it properly. So that's what the Patreon is about. It's not about us making money. We don't care about that. Even when John was doing it, he was throwing me money just so I could afford alcohol because... Alcohol's not cheap, and I drink a lot. But, you know, and also, you know, the camera I have that I take pictures occasionally with, the recorder. There's a lot of things we're going to do. I'm going to do lots of mini-game reviews, just me rambling on, trying to give you a good, solid review of the game, usually without me having played it. I might do a second one after I play it, and that's going to be free to everyone. You guys don't have to subscribe for that stuff. We want everyone to get that. It's just the minis and movies, and then whatever Seth does, and whatever Gonzo ends up doing for his solo thing, if he wants to, those will be the ones that you get for being a patron.
Which, going on that, if there's something you want us to see or test out or whatever, let us know.
Mm-hmm,
I'm more than happy to go, because I'm sure I can find somebody. If you got a game, I'm sure I can find someone that can teach me or walk me through it. For example, I've been trying to get Dark Deeds, card game.
Yeah.
It's an expensive card game. I mean, it's like $60 for a card game, and it's on a small little box, but it's fun as shit. It is so fun to play, because I got a demo at Adepticon, and so when we went to Midwest Melee, someone had it there for 50% off. So I'm like, yes, I will pay for that now.
Yeah, absolutely. Holy moly, yeah.
Yeah. So, I mean, if there's
a game...
That's
good, because you're supporting a guy at a con, meaning he wants to come back to the con.
Yes.
It's like supporting a... So, I have rules. If I go to a store and I play a game, if I'm there like every week, I don't buy anything every week, but I try to buy something at least once a month, because that store is supporting me with game space.
Correct.
Even if I go to a tournament I have to pay to get into, I try to buy something in the store anyways, because I'm there.
Yes.
If I go to a con, I try to buy something from dealers as much as I can, because I want those dealers to keep going to that con. It's what we have to do as gamers. I mean, I know the internet is great. It's easy to just punch a couple things in, and you've got whatever you need coming to you. But try and save some of that, like we're talking about with the Malifaux thing. We actually had a discussion where next time this comes up, we only do enough to get the free model that we have to get. You know, $100, you get a free model. And we're going to stop buying extra stuff that we don't need to because we want to support our store. You know, it used to be we'd get everyone together, we'd make these huge orders, and we're like, no, we're doing single orders. I ordered just enough to get my free Miss Deed, who's an alternate tailor model, who's just so much better than the one that comes in the box, because she's a cowgirl with a bionic arm. That's super awesome. And a hammer. And beyond that, I'm like, no, everything else I will buy when it comes out.
Yeah.
You know? It's you got to support the stores, and we support you supporting the stores.
Yeah, 100%. I've seen so many stores go under, and it just it makes me sad because I mean you got no place to play.
Mm-hmm. I got a good quick antidote for this. I ran multiple gaming stores throughout my 20s and early 30s, and there was a point where Magic was huge, and Pokemon became the next big thing. Pokemon came in. And there was so much, just when the internet started to hit big for buying stuff, I had family members who would not even walk in my store to purchase cards. They just went online and bought them there, not even giving me a chance. Mm-hmm. And you don't want to be that. I'm not going to say I hold a grudge, but I hold a grudge. That was uncool. My mom thought it was uncool. She holds a grudge for that because, you know, that's how your stores stay in line, you know? Yeah. If you see something cool, try to buy it. If you can't buy it from the store, see if the guys who make the game themselves sell it.
Yeah.
Try to skip. I love Miniature Market. They have good stuff. And once in a while, you have to. It's fine. But the majority of what you spend should be going to the store or directly to the company if you can do that to keep everything going.
And that is our soapbox for today.
Yeah.
With that, let's go ahead and get on our topic.
It's related directly.
100% it's related to this. A couple of weeks ago, there were two game companies that shut down.
And it was the same just day, like, pretty much.
Yeah. It was the same day, and it was shut down, gone, done.
Yeah. One was in the middle of the Kickstarter, and I feel sorry for those guys. They may not get anything, but that's a Kickstarter problem. You pay your money, you take your chances.
Yeah, because that was... What was the name of that company that went down?
So Relic was one? No, Relic wasn't one of them. It was Spartan Games was the big
Spartan
one.
Spartan Games. It was the big one. And they have quite a few games out there.
Oh yeah, absolutely. They had Dystopian Wars, then Dystopian Legions, and then also Firestorm Armada.
Mm-hmm.
And didn't Firestorm Armada have a Planet Strike version, like Firestorm
yes.
Planet Side? Yeah.
Yes. Let me see if I can find it. I can't remember what the other one was, but it was a real small company.
Yeah, I think the game they made was called Relic.
Yeah, the game they made was Relic, and which was, I'd looked at it and looked at the Kickstarter and looked at the miniatures, and it looked a little fun. It had a good game system, but I was like, not going to touch it, because I've got too many games,
mm-hmm.
per se.
I know it's called Relic. I thought it was called Relic, but...
The game was called Relic.
Yeah, I had never heard of it, so when this one went down, I was like, whatever. Tor Gaming. Relics is the name of the game.
Yep.
Yay, internets!
Yay, we can Google.
I saw some stuff of this game. It was, it actually had some cool-looking models. It looks kind of Napoleonic with weird stuff, too.
Yeah.
But they went under also, unfortunately.
They went under, and they, to me, they didn't even get to start.
No, they really didn't, and that's too bad. Yeah, there's one. Oh, hold on. Actually, there might be updating news. We're checking their website.
Oh.
They have a more recent update from earlier this week. So TT Combat, who did MDF Terrain and all that, mm-hmm. is actually taking the Relics game. They bought the IP and will continue to produce that. So that is cool.
That's good.
So that actually goes into some of the topics we're going to talk about is, you know, what to do when a gaming company goes under with a game you're playing and what to do when they go under with your models and all. And this is the best case scenario where the IP was enough that had enough pull that someone else bought it, helping the company, you know, close its doors properly and giving them the chance to make the miniature game a going thing.
Yeah. Now, the one I was really surprised about was Spartan Games.
Oh, yeah, they were big. They were been around for a while. I was like...
And they had quite a bit of things, but talking with other people, talking with other things, because they just brought out the Halo version. And I'm kind of curious if that wasn't part of the reason that they kind of went under, because it's such a big license, and they had to pay such a big fee for it,
mm-hmm.
and everything just couldn't keep up with it.
I think it was because it hit probably 5 years later than it needed to.
Yeah.
And from what I understand, it was a cool concept. I didn't see anyone play the ground version of Halo, but Halo Fleet Battles apparently was busted as heck. I mean, Covenant beats Marines because that's what happens in the Halo universe.
What?
Not really fair.
I only know one person that picked it up, and he thought it was fun. Mm-hmm. I didn't pick it up. But I did pick up Firestorm Armada. I picked up every single starter box when it first came out. I had a bunch of credit with this store, and I was like, I have no clue what I'm going to buy. And they were like, well, I got this coming out. I was like, oh, well, I'll pick up one of every starter set.
Yeah, give it. They had pretty good models. They had an interesting aesthetic, mm-hmm. but none of them really spoke to me, which is why I never picked it up. And as I was trying to figure out which one to pick up, because everyone was getting into it, that's when Star Wars Armada came out, and I was like, sorry, y'all can't compete with Star Wars, because Star yeah. Wars.
Well, I mean, I have the rules, read through the mm-hmm. rules, did a little playtesting with it. It has some really cool stuff. I've been missing a fleet, you know, battle-type game mm-hmm. And stuff, and it had some really cool things. Like, yeah, you could ram into other ships, but you had to roll a dice. And you had to roll a 6, because if you didn't, the captain took back over. But if you rolled a 6, the reason why is because someone shot the captain in the head, and they did it anyway. That's one of the rules that they kind of describe. I mean, and it had a lot of good stuff, and mm-hmm. miniatures were good.
Yeah, they were good, solid miniatures. It had the rules seemed decent from what I've seen.
Yep. There wasn't, for the most part, I didn't see anything wrong with it.
Yeah.
But I think that they probably... I don't want to say they shot themselves in the foot, but I think what happened is they started branching out too much. And, of course, then the Halo fleet, that license had to have been expensive.
Yeah, it couldn't have been cheap, and that's tough. I mean, when you get a license and it doesn't pan out the way you want it, that's a good way for a company to die.
Yeah.
And it's really unfortunate because a lot of people, you know, were kickstarting their newest thing. And I was always surprised by how many games they had. I felt like they were a company that was firmly entrenched with the amount of games that are coming out. I mean, I looked at Dystopian Legions because it looked interesting.
Yeah.
You know, I'm like, oh, cool. But it never really hit big. The models were okay, but it just seemed no one really picked it up. It had a smattering of people. Firestorm Armada was their most popular game by a landslide around here. And even then, I only saw a handful of people playing it, which is weird.
Yeah. I didn't see many people playing it. I went to a store in Little Rock, and it was there was a War Machine tournament, a real small one, and they had people playing it there, and they had like 6 or 7 people playing it. I was like, oh, okay, cool, I'm glad I bought that. Maybe I can come and play, you know, have some fun. But I also think that they, like I said, Congo's pretty much on the thing. They would get something, oh, Firestorm Armada is really good, guys, here it is, but hey, what about Dystopians? We're going to send out Dystopian stuff for you, too. Mm-hmm. So it became, I think that they kind of pushed themselves, I don't want to say they pushed themselves out, but they kind of had issues.
Yeah, I don't feel like they did it right. You know, it wasn't the best way to do it. You need to get entrenched, get your game, you can get your secondary game out. Like Dystopian Wars and Dystopian and Firestorm Armada seem like go with those two for a bit. It's a untapped or very rarely tapped scale and content, especially mm-hmm. Dystopian Wars, you know, because it was sort of like epic scale but with, you know, steampunk, which was cool.
Yeah.
And then, you know, Firestorm Armada, I mean, it is hard to find a good spaceship combat game. I have played many, many a spaceship combat game, and they always end up being too complicated or not complicated enough.
Yeah.
And it seemed like it might have been that sweet spot, but it was hard to find, you know, a lot of information on it. You know, you had to talk to the guys, and like, I really want to make an informed decision going into a new game, but it was difficult.
Yeah. And that's what I was kind of looking for whenever I saw it. I was like, oh, I'd love to have a good space fleet battle game. And mm-hmm. that's the reason why I picked it up. And then all of a sudden, you know, nobody was playing. I even have some of the sets painted up. I've tried to eBay them. Of course, nobody's going to buy them now because they're gone and the game's...
Well, they might. That's actually a good segue into the next thing is, what do you do when a game dies? as a gamer, what can you do?
You can do what most people do. Try to play with it for a while, and then something new comes out, and so you eBay it to try to get some of your money back.
Yep. That's most common, but the highest hope you can have is, like Tor Gaming, the IP gets purchased by somebody before everyone loses interest so that it stays. The second highest is you get Blood Bowl, where it was around long enough, and it wasn't because the company, you know, folded, it's because the company stopped making it. But it's an interesting lesson, is that there were so many fans of it, they kept it alive themselves.
Yeah.
They like, internet's big enough, they got together, like, we're keeping it together. And they did. And it was great. And that can happen. Like, it would not surprise me if Firestorm Armada, people got together and kept it alive. There was an old card game called Overpower, which started off as Marvel, ended up Marvel and DC, and that game lasted about 10 years after they stopped making cards with it, because people were still playing it, and there were guys online making new cards you could print and use. Mostly it was more heroes to use the existing power cards in different ways. That game stayed around for a lot longer than I really ever thought it would.
You know, thinking about that, and you mentioned Blood Bowl, you could wait, and it might come back again.
Mm-hmm.
Example, Necromunda.
Necromunda.
Necromunda was a game I loved balls down, because it was a storytelling game. You had things that, you know, my guy died. Let's see what happened to him. Oh, he lost an eyeball, so he had -1 to his ballistic skill.
Yep.
This guy, he went crazy. Now he has a higher melee skill, and has to charge and charge into battle like crazy. I was like, this was cool.
Yeah.
It wasn't a big thing. You had 10 models, maybe, unless you played the Spires and you had 3.
you could end with higher models than that, but generally, you know, 10 to 15 was where you would top out.
Yeah.
If you got more than that, it just became untenable.
Yeah. And when they announced that, I was like, fuck yeah.
So that's what you hope for, is you hope that someone keeps it alive, or someone purchases the IP and continues it out there. It seems like Firestorm Armada might be just big enough that someone might purchase it, but it's hard to tell, especially because that company's in trouble, and they'll be looking to sell their IP so they can cover their debts.
Yes. I mean, because the worst part about all of these companies closing is not that the game's going to be over. Everybody's out of a job.
Yeah.
And most people aren't going to work in that industry again unless it was, you know, the higher-ups that, oh, hey, I did this game. Can I jump on your game? Or, you know, go to a different game company.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, because it affects everything, because you got the people that were working on the game. You got the people that were doing the molds for the game. People that were, you know, molding it at the factory.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, there's a lot of people. I mean, it's just like, I couldn't imagine being at a game company or any company, and then the next day they says, we're closing doors, guys, everybody go home, everybody's laid off.
Yeah, that's tough. I mean, so if it doesn't get picked up, and if the community as a whole does not decide to keep it together, you are left with the Gonzo thing, whereas you hold on as long as you can, you and your friends playing, and then you get rid of it. That's pretty much the only option you have. Maybe keep the models. I have Babylon 5 Wars models hanging around here somewhere in a figure case.
Oh my god.
That game has not been a thing in a while.
Yeah, some people hold on to them because they like them, or, you know, they use them for something else.
Hey, I had painted them. I had painted Star Furies. Like, tiny Star Furies. It's when I learned that just a little bit of something goes a long way in those models, and I keep them around just because they're cool. They're painted. No one's going to buy them on eBay, so either I throw them out, or eventually I'll get to the point where I have a nice display figure case. I'll touch them up, and I'll put them in there.
Yeah. I know, like, a lot of fantasy models, mm-hmm. you know, sword and sorcery, people keep them for miniature games, as mm-hmm. in D&D and stuff, or whatever. They use it for that, which
mm-hmm.
I don't know how many times I've seen people use, you know, models for an RPG from something, so.
Oh, absolutely, yeah. I keep any fantasy sort of model or any vaguely superhero model for RPGs in case I decide to go into a map-heavy game.
Mm-hmm.
But so the point is you can get rid of them on eBay, but maybe you don't want to. Because if no one's playing the game, your return on investment is going to be tiny. And honestly, with the chances, the way how nostalgia-driven our entire industry is, really, maybe you hold on to them as long as you can. You know, you can keep it in your mind, like you. I write desk notes on notepads, like maybe write a note like Dystopian Wars. So you keep an eye on eBay, see how they're going. If it seems like it's starting to get to the point where you're like, that's enough money that I feel like I could get rid of them for that, do it, by all means. You're not playing it, get rid of it. I think Nathan Hoffman on Cripple Systems said, if I don't touch something in a year, I get rid of it, because obviously I'm not using it.
Yeah.
Which is fair. I have a little more wider range on that, but after a year, I started thinking about it. So if you're not playing the game, locals aren't playing the game, think about getting rid of them. But keep an eye on the market, because if the market's not good, you're just basically giving them away. At that point, unless you absolutely positively need the space, just keep them.
Yeah.
You never know when they might be useful for something. I have some Battlefleet Gothic ships around, some space stations and transports and all, because I could put them on bases and use them for random things in, objectives and stuff in, say, Armada, Star Wars Armada. You know, well, all sorts of things I can do.
Going on that concept, I remember when X-Wing first came out, and mm-hmm. how hard it was to get the game, the models to play it. Mm-hmm. And it was interesting, because I went to every gaming store, I went to
Targets.
Targets, I went to Books of Millions to try to get them, and I found out the reason why you couldn't get it is because everybody was buying them up for the RPG,
mm-hmm.
for the Star Wars RPG, and using those models in the RPG, and that's another thing you can do with it.
Yep.
Legionnaire, it is the new Murder Crows for Grimkin. I'm trying to... You can't really see them because it's not focusing on it. But just the different poses. I'm trying to get out of the way. Not going to work. My camera sucks for that. I got 2 units of the Murder Crows from a good friend of mine. And I'm just putting them together. They're actually really cool models. The entire bodies are the new resin. And the head and arms and a couple of the legs on some of them are metal. You can't see it, but it's... It kind of sucks. Which I think they're an awesome unit, by the way. Mm-hmm. I've got a list that I'm going to play them in. Okay.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
So that's pretty much your basic options. But, like I said, you keep them if you can, because you never know. Something like Battletech. Battletech has been dead and buried a couple times.
Yep.
Yet here it is, back out. Not the same rules anymore. Not even by... I mean, you can play the same rules, but I'll be honest, those Battletech rules are a little dated. But they have the Alpha Strike rules, which are brand new company in charge, not using any of the IP-infringing models that they made their name on, which is a whole other story. And all those old models. Like, there were guys playing the new game, and they saw some Battletech models sitting in one of my cases. They're like, oh, hey, what do you want for them? I'm like, you can have them if you're going to use them. Because they've been sitting in a case, like my cousin had them sitting in his case for years, and then he gave them to me because he's cleaning it out because he knew I did models. So I'm like, you can have them, just use them. I do not care. But that's sort of the thing, you know. You never know when they might become useful. You got extra fantasy models, like Gonzo said, save them for your D&D RPG or Pathfinder, whatever you play. You got extra superhero models, like I've got the whole Guardians of the Galaxy for the old Knight Models Marvel game, which is not ever going to be a thing because the Marvel license is way too expensive for how fast they put out stuff, which is understandable because Marvel's a big deal. But I keep them because A, I still have the rules and there is still a compatible game, and B, because they're cool models, I may just want to keep.
Well, I mean, there's a lot of people connecting with a bunch of people and connecting with all these painters, that there's a lot of there's a lot of models out there that are just models,
mm-hmm.
That, you know, busts or just whatever. And to me, I'm like, I can't buy a model that I'm not going to play with. One, because of money, and two, I'm a horrible painter, so I wouldn't do it. But I mean, you could take those models, and if you're a good painter or want to do a good scenario or do whatever, use them and put them in a painting competition. Mm-hmm. I mean, there's nothing says that you can't refurbish those models for something else.
Yeah, doubly so. Especially, like, here's a model. If you like that model, keep that model. I have, like, all sorts of models from various things that I've made work in a 40K game or made work in a role-playing game, or I just keep because I damn like the model. You can totally do that. That's okay. Even if you're not, even if you're Gonzo, you're not the best painter. If you just enjoy the idea of painting a model, I have, like, a buddy's like, I can't paint, but I've got all these old Star Wars models from the old Star Wars role-playing game they made, and he just wanted some tips to paint them so he could put them on display. Give him tips. He's, you know, there's an old Star Blazers fleet battle game. Tons of people got the Yamato because they just wanted the Yamato and just paint it up real quick, put it on the shelf. Who cares? It's cool. You know, it doesn't have to be about the game. Sometimes it can be about the models. And you never know when something comes back and, you know, your models are useful again, but you have to be, more importantly, you have to be in yourself. You have to know what you want to do.
Yeah.
You know, if that game is dead, you got to know what you're going to do with them. Best example is still those Guardians of the Galaxy models I have. That game, I mean, I can still play them technically, but there will never be any new models for them. There are some Night Models did release the stat cards for the rest of the models for Marvel they were planning on making that they actually gotten through playtesting. So I can find models and make that work, and I can play them versus DC. But at the very least, I play a lot of superhero role-playing games. I can keep them because they may be useful.
Yeah.
The Thing is a super useful model, and I love The Thing. I'm going to paint them up, goddamn right. When? I don't know. But I'll keep the model because I'll paint them up. He doesn't take up a lot of space. You just have to... I have a figure case of models that are just, like, from our old role-playing games and all that... we don't use too often, but you know, we used to use them for a role playing game all the time. We don't use a map anymore. A lot more descriptive. But we used to make models for everything. You know, when half the people work at Games Workshop, you'd be surprised if you can walk into the bits room and make a superhero model out of GW stuff.
Oh yeah.
And we used to do that all the time, and I have a ton of models for that. I still keep them because they're not taking up that much space. If it comes to the place where I don't need them, I'll chuck them, sell them as bits, whatever. You know, someone might want them. But it's a decision you have to make for yourself, you know, when the game ends, what you want to do. Because if you're someone who is even a remotely new shiny, where you like the something new being injected into your game, you might want to just eject from any game that goes under.
Well,
if you're a chess guy where you can handle the same rules for a long time, maybe you keep it. Maybe you find someone to play once in a while. Maybe it's just good enough.
What about, you know, we got game companies that go under, and it's a horrible thing, and it's bad, but, you know, it's a business. That's the thing.
Absolutely.
It's a business. They're not making money. They're not going to do it. Mm-hmm. What about when game companies stop supporting the game, even though they're still around? Because that's what I'm feeling with Cool Mini or Not right now.
I love
Wrath of Kings. Super good game, super fun, incredible models. I think it's got a great tournament type style. I think it's one of the better ones. I think it's even better than the Steamroller packet.
Damn!
Because of the way the game is built and the way that you win. Because you can win many different ways and not just from assassination and control points.
So, to do this in a way that I don't cast shade upon a company through information I have through third parties, let us say that some companies will just rotate through what they're focusing on. So if the company stops supporting it, if it's just they're not supporting it, they're not putting a lot out there, but they're still putting out new models, keep the game if you love it. Yeah. I mean, you have to.
Congo's sitting here and he's talking about, you know, they may have put something out about 2 months ago. Correct, but they don't do anything for anybody. Mm-hmm. They don't support it like, oh, we want you to play tournaments. Here's some new stuff. It's like, oh, here's another model, guys. Can you go away while we work on something else?
Exactly, yeah. And
that may not be what they're doing. That's just the way it feels.
Well, the thing is, they just took over Dark Age entirely. We were talking this before we even started the pre-ramble. They took over Dark Age, and Dark Age is apparently big enough that it's going to take their focus for a while. And since my locals are playing some Dark Age, I've been looking at the models, and it's really difficult to model, so I feel like they're a small enough company that their entire focus is on this one game.
Yes.
But, yeah, you gotta make a hard choice at that point. If they're not supporting your game, you have to go, like, you can hold out hope that they will continue to support it eventually, or you can go, it's not gonna be, I need to eject and go. Because sometimes you have to. Sometimes you just have to eject. Like, we're joking in the pre-ramble that I bought a 40K model. I ejected from all of Games Workshop games at once. I literally, like, I tried for a bit, then I got in the War Machine, I'm like, I'm out completely. It was the dark times of GW. I'm done. But now that it's back in good, I'm starting to get more models. You know, get models again. So, this is the opposite side where a game goes bad, which is like it not being supported, really.
Mm-hmm.
And you get completely out and need to get back in. If I had all those Eldar models I had Eldar armies. I sold them. If I had them, I could jump right back in. But I cannot. I actually have to purchase new models. So it is the other side of the coin. You know, you need to have that in your head. If you're like, I'm okay being completely out and having to purchase models to get back in. I'm gonna do it slowly, get some models, try and paint as I go a little more, not go overly. I have enough games to play. I don't need to play 40K. But I would like to if it continues on this trend, because there's a lot of guys, a lot of my friends that I like hanging out with play it. So that's an option, but that's one of those hard choices you have to make. Like I said, I'm totally okay with the fact that I'm there and I have to buy models to get back in. But you have to make that choice for yourself.
I was reading chat and stuff, and Congo and Legionnaires are talking about Dark Age, and it's starting to pick up. There's more people starting to play it. They're trying to push it a lot more, and they're talking about rules wise. And of course, he comes up, is it Age of Sigmar? Give me an Age of Sigmar to infinity level, and I definitely like Congo. Nothing is quite infinity level. That's another reason I love Infinity. Love the models. Love the game. But yeah, a lot of the rules you just got to throw out. And that's actually maybe the reason why they took over Dark Age and trying to redo it, because I heard originally it was a pain in the ass. So, and maybe they changed it.
Yeah, I heard they changed the rules a lot. I've seen a bunch of play. I saw two games on Saturday in a row, which is impressive. I told you how my buddy Marshall, El Marshall, is playing at a very high level. He's going to play for the national championship. Out the gate. But he said that somehow randomly he got the starter for the faction that is him. You know, it speaks to him. It's cool. But some of those games are big and you don't even know it. Or just big enough, I guess, is a better word for it. Because War Machine is big. 40K is big. Dark Age is not big, but maybe it's just big enough for you.
Well, it also comes down to miniatures. Because... Mm-hmm. Talking about Malifaux, something came up from the store and something, and I was like, oh, John plays Malifaux, let me see what all the hubbub is about. I've seen the miniatures, and then I went on there and was like, oh, well, if I was going to play, I would look for what would be not my style, but what I like in the miniatures. And I got overwhelmed. I was like, crap, there's a shit ton of army miniatures for this game.
Well, did this release, I believe it's Wave 4 overall? Because they release one wave a year, basically. They release a book, they release models with that book. That's the only time and through the year, they that's what they release.
Well, I mean, because I was looking at stuff, and I don't even know who they are. The guys that are on the caskets.
So, the Death Marshals.
I just thought those were cool as shit miniatures. Mm-hmm. I was like, oh man, those are awesome. I don't care the rules on them, but I don't have anybody here to play, so I'm like, eh.
Yeah, and the cool thing is that their leader is a blind swordswoman named Lady Justice. She's super cool. Their games are very stylistic, and this sort of goes full circle into what for a game. You have to have people to play with you to be in a game.
Mm-hmm.
You can love a game to your heart's content. If no one's there to play, they're just models that you're going to collect.
Yeah.
Which, if you are okay with, do it. by all means do it. There is a joy to assembling and painting models that people get, by all means. But know in your head and in your heart that if no one else plays this game, you're not going to get to play it.
Correct.
It's like my teenage years where it was all D&D. No matter what role-playing game I found was super awesome, all we were going to play was D&D. But I bought the books knowing full well all we were going to play was D&D because I wanted to. It's the same thing. I mean, gaming is way more mainstream, but still, there's going to be, you know, underground alternative games, and if no one's playing them...
Yeah, you're not going to get... It's kind of worthless.
Yeah, check the store. I mean, this can go. This is a whole bigger subject that we can talk about in some later date, but you can be the man who gets that game going, but it's difficult.
Yes. I mean, there's a ton of miniature games out there, and that's what's scary, is we're kind of at a weird point in miniature gaming because there is so many. When I went to Adepticon, I went to everything I could find, checked out the Dust guys because I like their miniatures. Not a really good game for me. It was okay, but I dug the miniatures, played that, moved on. Arena Rex. Mm-hmm. Love Arena Rex. It's an incredibly fun game. Very few model counts. Incredible miniatures. Very delicate miniatures, but incredible miniatures.
Mm-hmm.
And I bought in on that, and quite a few of us bought into it. And then there was this one game, I think it was called Epic. I can't remember the full name of it, but it was like it was like a post mutant apocalyptic world, and it was like a French company, and they were showing me how to play. I was showing a friend of mine how to play, and I was looking at the miniatures like, oh, this guy looks really cool. And then I heard how they were doing it. I was like, okay, well, first you got to roll to shoot. Okay, you got to shoot. He's got to roll to dodge. And then now you got to roll to see where you shot at and see if you beat the armor in that one section of the body. And I was like, okay, this is getting too complicated now. You're going too much.
Yeah. There's a reason it's called Keep It Simple, Stupid.
Yeah.
It's the reason Malifaux is not bigger, like... Or not Malifaux, Infinity. Infinity probably could have overwhelmed when 40K went down if it was not so goddamn complex.
Yes, because it's... There's the rules you don't even do because they're too complicated.
Yeah, Infinity is the ultimate in... It needs a good, solid, concrete, slow-grow leagues format. And I've made one in the past for Drop Zone back in the day. Where you just add stuff. So you add stuff and you add the rules for that stuff as you go because it's so much easier to learn as you go.
Yes.
But they really, as a company, need to work on that and decide, start here, learn this stuff, learn this stuff, learn this stuff. Because at a core level of guys shooting at guys, it's not that bad.
No.
It's guys shooting at guys who have lots of special rules and guys who are hacking stuff. And then you're just like, what's going on?
Yeah, you get to the hacking parts and...
Well, hacking is like having spellcasters, but it's not easy.
No.
You know, you get psykers in 40K. Those are easy. Spellcasters in War Machine, even so much as going your Warcaster or Warlock, still relatively easy.
Yes.
Imagine having, at the limited level, double the number of spells you have and not on a quick reference card. You got to go to the rule book and go like, what can I do? Well, that can only target a tag, so no. That can target a heavy infantry. No, it's not as heavy. It gets crazy pretty quick.
Yes, it does. And the thing is they're actually cool rules.
Oh,
and
absolutely.
And they can do really cool things. It's just there's too much to it.
Infinity is... If you like Infinity and you could handle that being your one major game, by all means, you're going to love it. Because it has enough depth and complexity to be... the one game.
Yes.
But as a partial game, you're always going to be like, I feel like I have to relearn half this game every time I start playing it again.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Okay, we got a little bit off topic and talk about other games, but...
Yeah, we're way off topic, but I'm also a little drunk because that Kraken is a little rough.
But, I mean...
The Kraken Barrel is tasty, though.
Legionnaires, it's not begging for a cheat sheet. You would have a cheat sheet that is probably about 10 pages long.
Or, actually, remember Captain Spud from Lost Hemisphere? He's a big Infinity guy, and he actually made a program, like a website thing, where you go in, you're like, all right, this is my target, this is what my level of hacking is, what can I do? He made that. It's super, super handy, but I feel like Infinity is a game that could use cards.
Yeah.
Dark Age uses cards, Malifaux uses cards, theoretically War Machine uses cards, even they want you to use War Room, but still technically cards. That is the way to go for a lot of games. Mm-hmm. Like, 40K is simple enough that you don't need cards. Its competitor, Warpath, which is basically 40K Lite, I'll be reviewing it soon, actually. I got the two books, my buddy loaned them to me, I read through those, is kind of 40K-ish also. It could probably use cards, but that's just because it's so much easier to look at a card and go, oh, this and this, than have to go through the rule book. Hold on, where's this guy? Oh, he's that. That's his stats. Honestly, cards or an app are the way to go for a game, but...
Yes. You know. I'm waiting for when GW finally does a war room for them.
Malifaux's working on it.
Yeah.
Weird Games is working on it.
You can't beat it. I don't have to ever worry about bringing cards. I can build my armies in a split second. I don't have to use a weird program.
For Malifaux, you could actually build the games. We have an app in Malifaux that is like... what was it called? Hold on 1 second. My brain's not working. Probably because of alcohol. iBodger. There is a Malifaux program that's like iBodger. That where you can build your list boom, 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 easy. I've got it on my iPad. It's called Crufo. F-A-U-X, Crufo.
Yeah.
It's great to use it, but you still have to know what the stuff does because it doesn't have a listing of what everything does.
Oh, yeah. Now, going back and talking about that, Guild Ball.
Guild Ball.
Guild Ball has also, and they're actually doing really well. They've got rumors of different games coming out. But they made, and I don't think they made it, someone else made it, and just lets them use all their stuff to build your army and make it quick and easy, and has all the stats and the cards.
Yeah, I've seen people use that when they're playing.
Yeah, and that's really good. I mean, you don't have to worry about it too much. And that's a game company that kind of rose to fame super quick. Mm-hmm. And I'm technically kind of, I don't want to say I'm worried, but hopefully they continue to keep growing. And they said they're supposed to be bringing out a large-scale battle game in their universe.
I hope they keep it skirmish scale, or that medium, just under War Machine scale. Because I feel, and sort of my problem with playing Warhammer 40K again is, I don't ever want that many models again. I could not play Orcs. I've played Orcs, I've played Imperial Guard, I can't do it again. Because I want to have the hope in my heart that I could paint all these models. And I look at a guard army and I'm like, nope.
Oh.
It's not happening.
I have to cut you off.
Oh.
Because it is 8 o'clock.
It's time to rock?
It's time to roll. It's time to give you your media section.
Oh, yeah.
Which, do you have, how many movies are you going to do this time?
I'm going to talk about 3... at least, and I have a TV series and stuff, but 3 I remember.
Okay. I have, and you're going to love some of them, and if you haven't seen them, you're going to have to see them.
Oh, shit.
So, what's your first one?
My first one, in order I watched them, is a Rift Tracks of a movie called Death Promise. It will be quick. It is a 70s movie, and I can only describe it as someone watched Enter the Dragon and thought it was the best thing ever. Understandably. Someone described that to another director who likes kung fu movies, and he said, I can make a movie like that. He didn't actually go and watch Enter the Dragon. He just said, I can make a movie like that, and then he tried to. The entire concept is, there's this kung fu guy and his father live in the same apartment building, and they're trying to kick them out because they want to repurpose the building for something else. Standard plot, easy, simple, good. But it just gets crazy because the kung fu action is not good. Like, the guy knows what he's doing, but it's just not choreographed. I mean, it's a 70s movie. But it's just like, this is not even as good as older movies than it. They have a shitty 70s theme song called Death Promise. But even when the main character is doing his inner monologue, telling his dead father... Spoiler, his father dies. It's not really a spoiler. You'd see that coming a mile away. That he's going to avenge him. He never says the words death promise, and I feel like that you should have. And the Riff Tracks guy also, the Riff Tracks guys totally nail it on a couple of these things, talking about it. And it just doesn't make sense. It's just a bad movie that they just riffed and made it enjoyable. On the bright side, it's only an hour and 20-some minutes long. So you can, like, eat dinner, and you're by the time you're done dinner, you're a good third of the way through it, and nothing's really happened. it's not good. If you're bored, and you got an hour and 20 minutes, watch it. I imagine there's got to be something better to watch, even with Riff Tracks. By all means, try the Megaforce episode, or any of their other episodes. It's not enough kung fu action to be happy, not enough story to make fun of. I mean, they do their best, but it's just not a good movie.
No.
It's decidedly bad. I give the Riff Tracks version of it 4 shots of Kraken. The original version of it, do not watch. Fucking, there's better things to do with your life. Like, just have someone kick you in the dick and go watch something good instead. Seriously. Oh. Groundzo, so what's your first movie?
I watched this with a friend of mine. Actually, no. I can't remember who I watched this. But you can tell this movie is going to be awesome because of the way it's spelled. It's Dragon Fire, and the I is a Y.
Yeah! Well, that sounds epic. Let's hear it.
Okay. So the basis of this movie is there's this princess that's running away from this band of orcs and has to find the special protector guardian to help her.
Like you do.
Well, the protector guardian is an old man on Earth that carries a machine gun.
Okay.
And she has to go through this portal cave, and it lets her into Earth.
Okay.
But it only happens during a certain time, during a certain moon, during a certain alignment. And he dies. Big spoiler, the guardian dies. So we cut to the true hero, an Iraqi war vet that has PTSD and is wanting to move out to the farm or the country to get away from everything. Of course, he gets wrapped up in all of this drama of orcs and gunfighting and dragons, which you see the dragon the last 20 minutes of the movie. But what makes this so good, it is so funny, and you just watch it and you laugh your ass off, because it's an Iraqi vet with a plethora of weapons, because the old man had a shit ton of weapons, and mowing down orcs with swords. So he's throwing grenades and shooting machine guns, and then he's got this mystic...
It's like Commando.
Yeah.
Orcs instead of soldiers with guns.
Yeah, I mean, he's got this Indian mystic that helps him through his life, and, you know, is telling him how to do everything. He's blind, of course, but can still do all this cool stuff because he's blind.
Of course you can.
Yeah. And then you got these rednecks that are in the woods that are your, you know, Bubba's, oh, we're gonna go shoot some stuff type thing. I mean, hardcore bad. One of them joins up with him, and they all fight together, and then there's, like, this huge battle at the very end, and it's like, he never runs out of ammo, ever.
Of course.
Never. Grenades, he can throw them 5 feet, it won't hurt him, but will kill the orcs.
Okay.
He just sprays and prays everything.
Oh, my.
The special effects are horrible.
So you're telling me they need to Riff Tracks this.
Oh, right, like Jason the Argonaut type, you know, special effects bad.
Well, Jason Argonauts has an excuse.
Yes, yes. but what they do in it, I mean, it's... Okay, I'm going to rate it. I'm going to give it two different ratings, okay?
Okay.
If you're watching this for a good sci-fi split type thing, just don't. I mean, just down a bottle of Kraken.
Rating, just yeah. Don't.
Just don't. If you go into this looking for a, you know, MST3K or, you know, riff tracking, you will love it because it is, you will laugh the whole thing at the most inappropriate things. Awesome. And you're just like, this sucks.
So it's a lot like Death Promise, you're telling me.
Yes.
It just sounds like a better upside for the riffing.
Yeah. I mean, I went and looked for, you know, like the actors and actresses, and some of the stuff just didn't make sense in the movie at all. And it was, I mean, it was bad. It was so horrible, but it was so funny. So I 100% recommend you watch it, but watch it in the mindset of MST or Riff Tracks or whatever.
Gotcha.
And remember, it's Dragonfire with a Y, not an I.
Fair enough. So the second movie is one I actually wanted to watch for a while, but it just finally came on, I think, Amazon Prime or Netflix for free.
Mm-hmm.
That is Shooter, starring Mark Wahlberg.
Oh. I haven't seen that yet.
So it's for free on Amazon Prime or Netflix. I will actually say, start to say, I suggest it, but not for Mark Wahlberg.
What?
He's not bad, but so he's a war veteran who got left for dead, and now he doesn't totally trust the government, and he's very serious through the whole thing, which means you don't get the Mark Wahlberg charm.
Mm-hmm.
It's like The Rock and Faster, just not The Rock. Mark Wahlberg can't carry that as well. But so the whole premise is they hire him to foil an assassination attempt on the president, when really they needed to kill someone who was with the president, and he is going to get blamed for it. That's not a spoiler. That happens quickly, and you see it coming a mile away. I believe it was in the trailer for the movie when it came out.
Yeah, I think so, too.
So, the whole thing, he's running away, he's been shot, and he beats up a rookie FBI agent played by Michael Peña, who is way more interesting in this movie than Mark Wahlberg is.
What?
Yeah.
Not pants-dropping Mark Wahlberg.
Yeah, but Michael Peña's character, he's like, you know, they're like, oh, you're going to go on professional review because this guy beat you up, take your gun, and take your car. And he's like a super trained, you know, Marine Force recon sniper. I'm 3 weeks out of the academy. I feel lucky to be alive. I'm like, that's a fair statement. So they take him off, but he suddenly starts realizing the inconsistencies about it. And he starts looking at everything, and like, there's some interesting parts where he's like, we got this information 22 minutes after the shooting. There is no way it can come that quick. He's like really doing some interesting stuff. I feel like they missed their mark by making Mark Wahlberg the sole lead of the movie. I feel like it should have been Michael Peña as the overall lead. And then you like, you just pass Mark Wahlberg. You don't know what happened. You see it, you go in blind. And then when they meet up again and become teammates, that's when Mark Wahlberg goes, this is what happened to me, since you're asking. And gives the flashback to all the events that happened to him. I feel like it would have been a better movie that way. That being said, it is still enjoyable and still has a lot going for it. It is Antoine Fuqua, who is a pretty good director. Not his best work. But enjoyable as heck. Not quite perfect. I give it 2 shots of Kraken, which is a pretty good rating for what I thought was going to be absolutely standard action movie fare. It ended up being a little better. Just because I'm going to watch Michael Peña in anything, because he is amusing even in semi-serious roles. I enjoyed the heck out of that.
I'll have to see if I can get it, because I have Amazon Prime, so I'll definitely have to go watch it.
Mm-hmm.
I'll put that one on there.
Yeah, it was enjoyable. I watched it after, I watched it after getting back at like 10 o'clock at night from eating at a Mongolian grill with the guys, and I'm like, I'm just turning it on. I don't usually stay up that late, but I'm like, hell yeah. It kept my interest in the whole thing. Oh, what's your next one, Gonzo?
My next one is, and it's actually a TV series.
Okay.
I finally got to watch Glow. The Girls League of Wrestling, or Gorgeous Women of Wrestling, or whatever.
Gorgeous Ladies of Wrestling, probably.
Yeah, Gorgeous Ladies of Wrestling, yeah. Which I remember, because I remember when it happened, when that came out. So I was wondering how they were going to take it. And I actually binge-watched it all the way through.
Oh, shit.
I actually really, really liked it. The characters were interesting. The acting was fun. It's cool to see that time period again. Mm-hmm. It brings back memories. It hit on some good topics. It actually shows... The first scene of the entire series kind of sets the tone for everything, and it's actually really good. If you haven't watched it, I highly recommend it on Netflix. Can't wait for next season.
Mm-hmm.
It's funny. It's got some good scenes in it. It's got some good acting. It's very fun series. And they're only 30-minute episodes.
Okay,
so you can binge-watch them really quickly.
More importantly, I could watch them eating dinner, which is what I look for something.
Correct. So, I mean, it's not like you're going to be, you know, freaked out by watching it, or you know, I've got to spend 13 hours watching this series. They're only 30 minutes. So it was actually really good. I highly recommend it for anybody to watch it. Good, solid series. Definitely harkens back to the old days of wrestling, and you get to see, you know, they kind of play off of, you know, wrestling isn't real. And they're like, what? So it gets into that type of thing. But yes, I definitely... maybe two shots of Kraken, if you're not into that. But for all, I enjoyed it completely. It was great.
Awesome. Well, I'm going to talk about real quick about my current dinner TV series I watch, which is MacGyver, still. Still on season one, watching episodes here or there as I eat dinner if I am not on my computer watching something on YouTube. And still amusing. Still season one, a little formulaic. It did have Vernon Wells in the most recent episode I watched, which is cool. See him getting back in the day, getting some work. Not playing, you know, crazy biker guy from Mad Max or Bennett from Commando. But very interesting. I love how so many of these, like, you could not have this series nowadays the way they've written it.
Mm-hmm.
Because you cannot, you know, cheat a casino off a ring to mark cards, a magnet twice, and some dice that you took some salt and went to the shoe shiner and apparently used physics to make roll seven all the time. But it's still amusing. It's a great window into a less violent series. It's really an epitome of the 80s, where they're getting away from the violence in TV shows. There's violence, but like, there's got the gunshots, but no one gets shot.
Okay.
MacGyver does not beat anyone up. That's mm-hmm. not his game. He thinks his way out of problems. It's a very good version of that. Grant, if you want a more recent version of that, check out Burn Notice. That was very good and very similar.
I love Burn Notice.
I still need to finish the series. I missed the second to last season. I missed the season finale, and could never find it on USA. So I was just like, "Well, I guess I'm waiting."
Burn Notice is a definite. I'm glad it went through. It was a really good run of the show. I'm glad it got to the end.
It overstayed its welcome.
Yeah, you can tell that they were still going with it, but I'm glad it got an ending. Which is I hate when we watch a TV show and it just automatically ends.
But you don't have an ending.
Yeah, a.k.a. Dark Matter.
Yeah.
Yeah, I Dark hate that.
Matter. For those of you who haven't heard, Dark Matter is canceled. But Killjoys is getting two more seasons to finish out its run. And before you clamor that Killjoys is not as popular as Dark Matter, Killjoys is a sci-fi original, thus it is cheaper to continue to make than Dark Matter, which is a property they purchased.
Correct. Which I like Killjoys more than I like Dark Matter.
I've only seen the first episode of Killjoys, but my cousin has the season one on DVD. I'm going to borrow it. I just have to get time to watch more stuff. I have to work my time, massage my free time a little bit to make time for all this stuff, because I really want to watch it. Because the first episode, I'm like, this is intriguing. It felt kind of Firefly-ish.
Yes.
Which I think they were going for.
Yeah.
But
I like Killjoys more than Dark Matter.
Okay.
I think there was, yeah. And the reason why is because I like that in Killjoys, there's not a huge cast, and it's a lot of focus on them. But on Dark Matter, it's a huge cast.
Seven?
And yeah. And it's a pretty good cast, but I mean, they only focused on one or two people a lot. And that kind of irked me because, okay, the Android's awesome. And the little girl that's there, they focus a lot on those two characters. And I was just like, oh, come on, let the other one shine.
So I'm hoping that they let Killjoys get a movie in. Someone funds a even if it's a made-for-TV, made-for-Netflix, whatever movie, that they get a movie in just to wrap up in some fashion.
You mean Dark Matter?
Dark Matter, sorry, yeah.
Okay.
Because even a series like Birds of Prey, back in the day, if you remember that, got a two-hour movie to finish it up and wrap it up, and thus I felt like it was completed.
Sort of like what they're doing with Sense8. They got canceled, but then they said, hey, we're going to get a movie to wrap it up. And I'm like, yes, thank you.
Yeah, tie up some loose ends. You may not be able to do as well as you wanted to, but try and do something. Get a little closure helps a series.
Yes.
It also makes it more packageable as a purchasable quantity for people. Yeah. So that was MacGyver a little bit. I watched one lunch or dinner. I'm going to get Rebels and start watching that for dinner, but... Gonzo, what's your next one?
I watched the Netflix original movie, Little Evil.
Little Evil?
Yeah. It's about a kid that's supposedly Satan.
Okay.
And...
title says it all.
Yeah. The mother's marrying a guy, so he's a stepdad. And he has to deal with his son being... Satan.
Okay.
I actually recommend watching it because it's just a fun little side movie. Now, you don't have to worry about it much. It's got some pretty good funny parts. It kind of reminded me of... what was the John Ritter movie that had the bratty kid that was his stepdad? So he was a stepdad, and it was... Erica, it's kind of like Omen, but it's not because it's more comedy than it is serious.
Is it like the one where he's like using a remote control go through TV channels? Remember John Ritter? Is that the one? Or is it different
one? No, it's the one where he had a stepson. It was like Problem Child.
Problem Child, okay.
Yeah. But it's the kid Satan.
Okay, fair enough.
It's interesting. It's got a couple of, you know, good scenes in it. Not bad. It's not long either.
It's got the high end of medium reviews, which is what I expect like that. Not everyone's going to like it. Not everyone's cup of tea.
Yeah. I mean, it wasn't bad. I didn't have a problem with it. Like I said, maybe three shots of Kraken because it's kind of short, but it's... hey, I need something... I need something in the background as I'm doing something or, you know, whatever.
I find hour and a half, you can forgive a lot of sins for an hour and a half of a movie because you start off with dinner about halfway through. You know, when you're about done with dinner and you're about, you know, a third to a halfway through, you're like, you sit down with the rest of it. It's not a lot of time investment.
Yep.
Oh, so my final one to talk about tonight is one I just saw in the theater today. And it is Star Trek II, The Wrath of Khan.
Okay.
So it actually starts off with an interview with William Shatner, who, all you sci-fi guys out there, he's getting old.
What?
It's going to happen. Keep it in mind. He's getting a little scatterbrained here and there. It's understandable. But it's still an interesting interview, and then goes right into the director's cup of the Wrath of Khan, and man, that movie holds up like nobody's business.
Yeah,
35th anniversary, so more or less, and it still holds up. I mean, what do you say? They say it in the interview. It's the barometer, boy. All other Star Trek movies are gauged. It is the gold standard. It is number one. You're probably never going to exceed it on a Star Trek movie. Mm-hmm. Because it took something from the series and added it into the movies and did it in a good job. And the funny thing is, it's made for only $11 million, which is like a quarter what they made the slow motion picture for.
Yeah.
To be fair, I like Star Trek the Motion Picture, but I'm willing to sit through it and its slowness. I understand that, and I'm willing to eat that. This movie did not feel like it was 2 hours long. It's well-paced. It's well-acted. You can say what you want about William Shatner, but I actually feel like he does a good job of portraying Captain Kirk. Captain Kirk's a passionate guy, and you know, when he lets out the con, and he actually says that in the interview, he said he had con listed in the script in all caps, so I let it loose. And I'm like, it's been memed out of existence, but oh, yeah. It's not really as bad as the meme, but it gets the idea across. I mean, he's angry and yelling at con. It's also a great character piece for Captain Kirk. Just like sort of the new series has been an arc for Captain Kirk, the new Star Trek movies has been an arc for Captain Kirk, this movie was an important arc for him because he never faced death. He doesn't believe in a no-win situation, and he does not like to lose. And, you know, those are character flaws, and he has to address them in this movie. He doesn't have to lose, but he had to lose Spock, and you know he has to address that. And I guess if I'm going to be critical of the movie, the director's cut, there's a couple parts that could have stayed cut out of them walking back and walking between places because everything's down or because they just had extra scenes to fill. But there's a couple scenes with Scotty's nephew that should have stayed in, that add some poignancy, add some stakes to the early movie, and they take out Scotty's best scene. Because honestly, it's no big secret that it's mostly the Kirk, Spock, and McCoy show. More so the Kirk and Spock, but it's the Kirk, Spock, and McCoy show. And Kirstie Alley gets some decent time, but most of the rest of the cast doesn't get a lot of airtime on it. And Scotty's best moment when he's sitting in sick bay with his nephew there dying, and they cut out the part where he says, you know, he asks what con, you know, what's going on, you know, and Kirk tells him it's con, and he acts his way through that and telling McCoy, like, you know, thank you, doctor, I know you did your best, while he's, you know, mourning his nephew. And it's a really good, poignant scene. The whole scene, even the parts after he leaves and Kirk and McCoy are acting, that should have been in the original movie. But, you know, sometimes you gotta take stuff out for time. And the one thing I love about these Fathom events is they almost always show the director's cut of the movie, so anything they have fully ready to go usually makes it in those director cuts.
So how many shots of Kraken do you give it?
Zero. If I were to give it shots of Kraken, it's only because it's the end of the movie, Spock is dead, and
spoiler.
Come on, 35 years old, and they're about to play Amazing Grace on the bagpipe, and I start welling up because you cannot hear Amazing Grace on the bagpipes and not cry. If you can, you have no soul, and you scare me. I'm a grown man. I can say that. I get every time it gets me. I know it's coming, and my body's like, oh, natural reaction time. You're going to cry. Oh, but yeah, Zero Shots of Kraken. It's a great movie. Director's Cut's apparently out on DVD and Blu-ray. Check it out on Blu-ray. I mean, the effects hold up. They may not be as tight as some of the stuff, but they did such a good job when it came out, and on $11 million, which is amazing. They reused some shots here or there, but yeah, it's just them cutting costs.
Yeah,
it is great. It is a part of the Star Trek trilogy that is probably the best Star Trek you ever see, which is Star Trek II, Star Trek III, Star Trek IV. Add in Star Trek VI. That's all you need to watch the original series stuff. I know the whole odd numbers are bad. Star Trek III is not a bad movie. Is good. Check it out. Zero Shots of Kraken for Wrath of Khan. Gonzo, I know you got more stuff. Hit me with it.
I have two more, and we're running a little out of time because I actually have a special announcement today. Let's go with Death Note.
Okay, Death Note. Movie?
The movie. I love the anime. Really cool anime. You have to take Death Note, the movie, and completely separate it from Death Note, the series. And I mean completely. If you were to watch Death Note and didn't know about the anime, it wouldn't be that bad of a movie.
Mm-hmm.
It's okay. But if you go with Death Note, the anime, and the movie, it's the biggest steaming pile of shit you've ever seen.
Which is understandable. Most anime-related movies are.
Yeah, because it has nothing to do with any of the... all the characters are just off. They don't do justice to the anime, so it's just bad. If you can separate it from the anime, it's not that bad. But if you're a fan of the anime, don't watch it. You'll be upset more than anything.
Fair.
I'm not even going to give it shots of Kraken, just because of that.
It's going to be high or low, depending on...
Yes.
If you're a fan of the anime or not, or if you can divorce it.
My last one, of course this is on Netflix, but it's not a Netflix show, though. It's called Enter the Warrior's Gate. It is a story about a kid that's really good at fighting...
I've seen the preview video for
games.
This.
Yeah.
Yeah.
He's really good at fighting video games. And he's being bullied at school, but the guy he works for gives him this secret Chinese box barrel thing, and he has to protect the princess. This Asian princess. Well, of course, she comes over to our side and has all this, you know, have to adjust to our culture and do our stuff. And then eventually he has to go over to their world, where he has to learn martial arts to fight, and he becomes a martial arts god within one day.
Oh, wow.
He's that good, because he's played video games a lot. And so he has to go all through this. And the reason why I watched this is because, one, it sounded like it was stupid fun, and two, the guy that plays Drax in Guardians of the Galaxy.
Okay.
I can't remember his name.
Batista.
Yeah, he's in this, and he's the main bad guy.
Okay.
And this movie's a seeming pile of worse shit, too.
I was hoping against hope you'd say like the Forbidden Kingdom or some of those good ones, but...
No.
Okay, I will
remove
from my watch your list.
No. You have to watch it, though, because I recommended it to you.
Oh, I can't. I don't have time to watch
It is so bad. You see every plot line of every imagine. You can guess the entire movie from beginning to end once it starts.
Yikes.
There is no qualms. It's just bad.
Fair enough.
It's horrible.
Yeah, I hate that. It looks like this might be okay. And then you watch, you're like, oh no, this was not okay at all.
So definitely... Four shots of Kraken, because you just... Unless you like torturing and you're, you know, into that, go ahead. It is now 8:30, guys, but before we sign off, we are having a special guest next week, and I'm going to let Seth and John Rochambeau to see who's going to be on here with them. I don't know if anybody knows. I know a group of people that started a Kickstarter this week. And they got fully funded. I've been watching them for a while, following them around. And it's the development crew from Wonder, the Cult of Barnacle Bay. Some of their team members are going to be on next week. We're going to talk about their Kickstarter, because their board game is really cool. We're going to talk about what it's like to start a Kickstarter and be like at Gen Con and go to all these conventions to promote your product, because... That's actually a pretty big thing to do.
Absolutely.
So, I mean, I thought this was going to be something that would be different. They're a great bunch of people. So we're just going to see how it goes. Have a good time with them. We're going to talk about movies like usual. We're going to talk about... I want to get the inside feel of what it's like to start a Kickstarter. Start a board game. Get everything going. And get a... zero product to a fully funded Kickstarter. And they were funded quite quickly, too. And so we'll be linking them up and putting things on there so everybody can see them.
Cool.
So it's really interesting. They got some really cool models. Their studio painter is super awesome. She paints a lot for other companies, too. And hopefully I can get her on, because I would like to talk to her about her painting stuff. So with that, John, you got anything else?
That, no, I got nothing else.
All right, guys. We're signing off. Hope everybody has a good night. Be nice to each other. Help each other out. Thank you.